Hi, friends, and welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
Hit me, Alice Slater.
How are we feeling today, my dude?
I'm feeling good, bro. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling so good. I really got back on my reading bullshit this month. How has it been for you?
Okay, so I would say I've not got back on my reading bullshit compared to like 4 years ago, but I've been reading consistently. I'm feeling good. I've got a list of books.
I really am going to, on my little trip to Paris, really set me back on my path. I'd been, as I mentioned in the last episode, I'd been slacking on the reading in favor of spending all of the hours that God gave me knitting. But having a solo weekend away really provides a lot of reading time, especially when there's walking around to be done with an audiobook, especially when there is sitting outside a French cafe with a kir, many many such opportunities presenting themselves. So,
You're so fucking chic, bro. You're so fucking chic.
it may. So how are we doing? What's our number?
I have four full novels that I've read, and then I have three short story collections that I have dipped into that I would like to share with the class.
Oh, so we're kind of like we're not equals pequels, but we're close.
Cool. All right.
To use an Alice Slater phrase that I like. So I had nine this month. So shall I begin just for symmetry,
Kick us off.
for back and forth. So I began very Frenchly, actually, by purely by chance. I like Annie Ernaux. Do we know this about me? I really like the French author Annie Ernaux. And the first book I read in April of 2020 Six was A Girl's Story by Annie Ernaux. I like her books that are like, I mean, I think The Years is amazing, but I really like the short little books that are about like a really specific time in her life. So this is about when she was a holiday camp instructor in Normandy in 1958, and the kind of like sexual encounter that she has there and the sort of repercussions of that and how it ties into like other things that happen later in her life. I really enjoyed it. I'm really strongly pro Annie. Whenever I need like a reliable little hit, I will always go for an Annie Erno. Have you ever read any?
I have not, but I do have a fun Annie Ernaux story.
That seems unlikely, but try me.
My French publisher was telling me about Annie Ernaux's American publisher, and they produced Annie Ernaux merch with like a metal font,
Cool.
band like t-shirt.
Yeah.
And they made her wear one, or like maybe it was a cap or something. And she said that the image of just like sweet, gorgeous, chic little Annie Ernaux wearing this like fucking metal style t-shirt with her own name on it, really made her laugh, and the mental image really made me laugh.
I'd wear the shit out of that.
I fucking would too. You know I love my like rock and roll writer t-shirts.
Maybe I'll see if I can track one down. So that was my first. What was your first?
My first was The Night Stares by Erin Kelly.
Tell me more.
We love a bit of Erin. So The Night Stares is set in a like kind of boarding school, a Catholic girls' school, and all the girls start fainting. They kind of catch this like kind of copycat disease where they all keep getting this, it's called the spins. They get super dizzy and no, is it called the spins? Fuck it, I can't remember. Anyway, and this narrative is interspersed with the last time this happened in the school, which was like 20 years previously. And it's a really good time. It's a thriller. It was very gripping. It's very atmospheric. It has like some echoes of similarity between Spoilt Milk by Avery
Yes.
Curran, which I also enjoyed. But this one feels much more of a thriller. It's definitely more in the kind of crime category. And it's great. There's like a ghost nun.
I love the sound of this. This sounds right up my street.
Yeah, I recommend it. Also, it had an echo for me of, in terms of like sophistication of plot, kind of reminded me of The Burning Air.
Ooh, which is one of my, I'd say that's maybe my favorite Erin Kelly.
I feel like there were elements of it that reminded me of The Poison Tree in terms of like relationships between women. and elements of it that reminded me of The Burning Air in terms of the kind of complexity of the plot. But then also because it's Erin Kelly, it also felt just like very fresh with this completely new backdrop. I liked it.
Interesting. It when you were describing it, it also, I don't think you've read this, but it was also semi reminding me of A Narrow Door by Joanne Harris,
I
which,
have read A
have
Narrow
you?
Door.
I can't
Yeah,
remember if you
because
had or not.
weren't we didn't we interview her on the pod?
I interviewed her. I think you
Yeah.
couldn't make it, and I was maybe that's why I thought you hadn't read it.
I read it in prep for the interview, but then I couldn't make the interview.
Did was it would you agree that there's maybe atmospheric similarities?
Yeah, definitely. I
Yeah.
think that this one, The Night Stairs, feels more gothic.
Yes. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to reading it.
Come and hear your thoughts, bro.
So my next one was a book I'd never heard of and I absolutely loved. So I've mentioned him on the pod before, but my lovely friend John, he reads quite a lot but does not like to keep the books and so often passes the books on to me. And he gave me this book called Grief is for People by Sloane Crossley, who I had read a book by before. I'd read Cult Classic a few years ago and I quite liked it. Didn't like change my life. And so I'd never really been that curious about reading other stuff by her. But he gave me Grief is for People and he was very enthusiastic about it. And I absolutely loved. And weirdly, he is my friend who gave it to me is my former boss. And the book is about the death of her former boss, who she was very close to. But
John
it's
is my former boss.
John, yes. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He gave me my first job. That's some
Oh.
lore for the pod.
How you are friends with multiple former bosses?
Yeah, I know. It's given that I am like the personality hire, I am the Meg Stalter to multiple people's pull downs. It seems really unlikely that I would have like decades long friendships with these people. And yet here we are.
Fine, sure. Brilliant.
Grief is for people. Here is the blurb. For most of her adult life, Sloane and Russell worked together and played together as they navigated the corridors of office life, the literary world, and the dramatic cultural shifts in New York City. One day, while Russell is still alive, Sloane's apartment is broken into. Along with her most prized possessions, the thief makes off with her sense of security, leaving a mystery in its place. When Russell dies exactly 1 month later, his suicide propels her on a wild quest to right the unrightable, to explore what constitutes family and possession as the city itself faces the staggering toll brought on by the pandemic. So it's basically about these like two very kind of disturbing instances that happen in very quick succession just before COVID lockdown. And it's so great. I cannot recommend it enough. Whether you're interested, I wouldn't say that I'm normally interested in kind of like grief memoirs and stuff like that, but I thought she's so spiky and it really felt very kind of fresh and I really enjoyed her perspective. So I would really, really recommend Grief is for People.
Yeah, maybe I'll give that one a go. I do have a copy of Cult Classic, but I think because you felt lukewarm, I never picked it up. I'm so easily put off books. I just feel like there are so many fucking books. Even as we speak, I'm surrounded by two stacks of about 20 books each. It's almost like it takes almost nothing for me to be
Yeah.
like, okay, fuck it. And I should probably be a bit less lazy and find out how I feel about things for myself, but
I would say if you're going to read a Sloane Crossley, I'd read this one. But I
okay.
would say that because this is the one that I liked. What is your next pick, my dude?
Okay, bro. Have you heard of an author called Dennis Cooper?
Yes, the sleuths.
Sleuths. So
The
I
sleuths. But
absolutely.
for our listeners who do not speak our language.
Do you remember when we went through a phase of talking about the Da Vinci Code a lot, and we only ever said Da Vinci, and we got loads of people emailed us to tell us it's pronounced Da Vinci.
The Sluts by Dennis Cooper.
The Sluts by Dennis Cooper. So one of the most violent, visceral books I have ever read. There is one scene in particular that is so gross. I was reading it on the tube and I was like, bleh! Like I was physically struggling not to throw up. So obviously I had a great time and decided to read more. So I read Closer by Dennis Cooper, which is a, I think it's a Serpent's Tale, like class, rediscover classic. And oh my lord, bro.
We
Fuck
still
me.
buy then.
Oh man, I mean, I love sleaze. I love sleazy literature. And Bret Easton Ellis is a big fan of Dennis Cooper, which I think says a lot. This one is about a character called George Miles, who's a recurring character in Dennis Cooper's work. I think there's multiple books that feature this kind of enigmatic, beautiful young man. This novel is it kind of follows various different men who interact with George over a relatively short period of time when he's in high school. It's just so gritty and grimy and porny and violent. It's such dark literature. I feel like it's really, truly not for everyone. But if I just said a bunch of keywords, it made your little ears prick up, then this would be the book for you. And my God, I cannot even begin to describe how dark it is. But I just think he has such a distinctive voice. I'm looking forward to reading more.
Would you say that this one is less like make you vomit on the tube than the sluts? In terms of like content, because I'm curious, but I know if you're feeling a bit grossed out by something, I'm probably not going to enjoy it.
I would say it really is, it depends what your personal boundary for sexual violence is.
Oh, okay. Maybe I can, as long as, you know, does everyone leave with all their appendages intact? Okay, maybe not. We'll see.
No, that's me genuinely trying to remember. There was no moment in Closer that's as visceral as the big moment in the
Blues.
slot. However, it is very violent. I think you would be fine with Closer. There was no moment in Closer that I felt like I was going to throw up or I felt like I needed to put the book down. But there were multiple moments where I kind of shook my head so everyone on the tube knew that I didn't agree with the content of the work.
Okay, because I'm like curious, but
I mean, honestly, mate,
cautious.
have you read The Sluts? You haven't read it.
Ooh.
I would give it a go. You will know when you reach the bit. There's a good long build up to it. You will know when you reach the bit that I advise you potentially skip.
Okay.
But then also, yeah, it really depends on what your kind of what your limitations are in terms of language as well. Because like I feel like I'm a very visual reader, and I feel like you are as well. So I felt like I was experiencing what was happening on the page. I could taste it in my mouth, kind of shit, you know?
I don't want to be tasting. Keep that away from me.
Right.
Okay. I'll contemplate it. We can discuss further.
Need to think about.
So my next read, I had an experience with my next read that I'm also having with a book I'm reading right now, which we will cover in next installment of the pod, which is a book I'd started before and just not got into. So with this book, I'd finally got to the front of the queue at the library, was listening to it on audiobook, and only got like an hour or so in, and then it got returned to the library because there was a long queue for it. This time, I got the book back. I rejoined the queue. I got to the front of the queue, and now I've read the book, and it is so great. It is Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver.
I feel like you were really fucking edging us all there.
Well, the one I'm doing now, I feel like I've got even more elaborate rigmarole to discuss. But Demon Copperhead, I'm not the only person who will tell you this book slaps. The audiobook is long, it's like 24 hours long. And it is so great. So if you do not know, I feel like many people who listen to the pod will already have read Demon Copperhead, but if you do not know, it's basically a retelling of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens, set in kind of rural Appalachia at the beginning of the opioid crisis. So it's very much about like rural poverty addiction in America, and it is just so great. It is so well conceived, so well executed, beautifully written. I love her book, The Poisonwood Bible, but I've never read other books by her, and I certainly will because I thought this was just so gorge, so great, and the audiobook really slaps. Yes, my guy.
I have a question. I raised my hand on the camera
You
because I
did.
wanted to
You're
make
very
sure.
respectful.
So when I read The Goldfinch last year, which I had a copy of myself for like 5 years, it took me so long to get to it. I absolutely fucking loved it. Loved it so hard, I didn't want it to end. And when I expressed this joy on the internet, lots of people recommended Demon Copperhead. Is that just because it's another long book that's really good, or is there actual echoes between them?
I mean, obviously, the reason that people may also be doing that is that The Goldfinch is a bit Great
Oh,
Expectations.
duh. Yeah, of course. It's also a Charles Dickens novel.
Exactly. So I think maybe it could be that. It could be
The
the.
texture of the work, that's what I'm interested in. Like, texturally, do they have
I
kinship?
would say I wouldn't necessarily like rush to recommend this to you as someone who liked The Goldfinch.
This is why I don't fucking trust a single bitch on the planet, apart
Other
from
than
you.
me,
Other than you, girl, that's it.
I mean, I think it's amazing, but I just think it is very lot. I think you would enjoy it, but I don't. I think if you went in being like, "I want to relive the Goldfinch," you would not be reliving the Goldfinch.
Than a complete waste of my time. Now, it doesn't mean I wouldn't read the book. I'm just always curious when people recommend books in tandem. I
Yes,
want to know exactly why.
you want that angle. I would say it's like a long literary novel that is a contemporary retelling of a Charles Dickens book. From that perspective, yes, they are in a way similar.
Literally nothing in that sentence sparks joy in my heart.
Exactly.
The
Whereas
thing that
it's
I
the, yeah.
love about The Goldfinch is not the fact that it has echoes of Great Expectations. The thing I loved about it is the sleazy, like kind of chaotic journey that the character goes through. That's what I really enjoyed, and I enjoyed being so invested in what's the character's name again? Leo. I felt, is it Leo?
Something like that. I haven't
Yeah,
read it.
I felt. Huh?
I haven't read it for a long time.
Oh my God, I thought you said you hadn't read it. I was about
Get
to
real.
sweep everything off my desk. But yeah, the thing that's what I loved about it. I love feeling so invested in this character that I was happy to spend 800 pages with him. And maybe that is something that Demon Copperhead will spark within me, but I'm in no rush. I think I'd read the
Poisonwood Bible,
Poison
yeah.
Bible because that's also been recommended to me a bunch.
It's very elegant. It's very beautifully written. And I would really recommend it. But I just, yeah, for you, maybe, you know, it's a maybe. It's not like a you must read this book right now. What
Oh
was your
no.
next pick?
Oh my God, bro. Okay, my next book is called Molka by Monica Kim. It's not out yet. Oh no, it is. It's just come out. Oh no, it's sorry, it's out at the end of where the fuck are we? We're in May. It's just come out. It came out last week. Have you heard of Molka?
No. Oh, maybe I've seen it on like people's Instagram. Maybe I've saw
So
it. Tell me about it.
Monica Kim also wrote a book called The Eyes Are the Best Part, which
Yes.
came out, I think, last year. This one is, so Molka is the term for, it's a South Korean term, or a Korean term rather, for spy cameras that are illegally installed in like public restrooms and locker rooms and that kind of thing to film women changing. It's like a kind of voyeuristic thing, right? And I love sleaze, so I was like, this sounds fun. The first chapter is from the perspective of this pervert who has put these cameras up in his office. But my lord, it jumps between that freak and then a woman in the office who he has fallen in love with, and she's dating this like billionaire, and a video of them having sex that has been filmed illegally, obviously, goes viral. And it is just, it's so bleak. It's like, I can't really, there's a perfect way that I could nutshell it, but I think that that would also kind of spoil it.
Okay.
But it's a particular mode of fiction which does not necessarily usually appeal to me. I found the book really gripping, but I also found it, what's the word I'd even use? A degree of harrowing that I wasn't quite expecting, which I think some readers would go in, based on the subject matter, fully aware that it's going to be quite a harrowing read. I was not prepared for how harrowing I would find it. It also really reminded me of, have you read any Kylie Leigh Baker?
No, is it Batita?
Yeah, so the way that Bat Eater blends In the case of Bat-Eater, it's Japanese folk horror, like folklore. It has a ghostly, a supernatural element to it as well, and another plot point, which sits very closely to a B plot in Bat-Eater. So I felt like those two books kind of have a subtle conversation going on between them. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a very accomplished novel. However, my God, I just was not prepared for it to take me to the places that it took me.
I'm in. Have you got a fizzy cup?
I do have a fizzy cup. I'll lend you my fizzy cup.
Thank
And
you so
before I
much.
lend it to you, I will tell you personally
The
off
book.
air what my nutshell is, because I don't think you would find it a spoiler, but I don't want to put it on me. I don't want to ruin it for our listeners if in case they decide to go for it.
Oh, I'm in. Count me in.
All right. Your turn, Queen.
So the next book I read was Steal As Much As You Can by Natalie Ohler, who is a cool girly that I've followed online for a while and met at a Palestine solidarity fundraiser event hosted by Kirkdale Books in Sydenham last summer. And yeah, loved meeting her. I think she's really cool and interesting. And this is a book that came out a few years ago, basically looking back at the 2010s as like kind of thinking about like class and education and the media landscape and looking at kind of New Labour education policies and university attendance and kind of trying to figure out like what has gone wrong with our media establishment in as it relates to like the disenfranchisement of like working class people. And it's really cool. It's not massively long. The subtitle is basically How to Survive Austerity and Win the Culture Wars. So it's about, yeah, like class and poverty as it relates to culture and media. And I found it really interesting and I really liked her voice. She has a book about taste. I think it's just called Bad Taste, and I really want to read that, but my library doesn't
Oh,
have it.
I remember that one. It had like a leopard print cover.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think she's a really interesting like thinker and writer, and I'm really looking forward to reading more from her, and I think she's cool. Would recommend. Your turn.
Okay, so the next one, this is the last full novel that I read last month. It's Not Quite Dead Yet by Holly Jackson. This is Holly Jackson's first adult thriller. So she cut her teeth on very successful YA thrillers. A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, I think, was her baby. Anyway, so this one is, I read it, full disclosure, I read it for an event. I'm interviewing Holly next week. So at the time of this podcast going live, it will be on the Thursday.
Thursday the 7th.
Yes.
I've got things to say about Thursday the 7th when we wrap up. Continue.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Are you taking that off air?
No.
Oh, okay, amazing. Anyway. So yeah, I have found, right, since we've talked about this before on the pod, since the golden age of the thriller kind of peaked, I guess, in like 20, I want to say 15-ish, 14, where we had debuts from like Ruth Ware's debut, which was excellent, in A Dark, Dark Wood. We had Girl on the Train, which wasn't my favorite, but it was undeniably massive. It completely changed the landscape. What else did we have? A whole bunch of just banging shit came out in quick succession. But then gradually I found the thriller market, and I'm saying this as a thriller writer, you know? But I found that a lot of the stuff that really pops off has moved into a space of kind of silliness that I struggle with, right? Like, I really need the psychological journey of my characters to feel like it's baked in some kind of truth. I need to understand why characters are doing things. So I haven't really picked up very many thrillers, and the thrillers I have picked up, I haven't enjoyed that much. Which has then only further pushed me towards kind of dark literary fiction and horror and things like that. So this was such a fun read, and I wasn't necessarily expecting to enjoy it as much as I did because I've been burnt. I've been
You've
burnt,
been
man.
burnt.
So the premise of this book.
While you are looking that up, I will say that I am also currently reading a thriller that I was about next month when we record again. I will be having exactly the same preamble as you are having right now. Like the readers, the listeners of this pod will be listening to exactly the same disclaimer before I introduce a book I'm reading at the moment next month, because yeah, I found a good thriller again. We've looked back to back months, we've got good thrillers. Tell me about the Holly Jackson. Give me the blurb. Blurb me.
I just want to clarify there that I did not pause to look up the blurb. I'm an ex-bookseller man. I don't read the blurbs. I deliver my own sound bites. I muted myself to cough. All right.
She was vaping. Look,
I just wanted to
vaping.
fucking, I just wanted to like podcast mug you real quick. Anyway, so the premise of this one is at the very beginning of the novel. For a start, it opens at like a Halloween fair, so very atmospheric, very autumnal, set in Vermont. At the very beginning of the novel, all these characters are mingling at this big event. There's like neighbors and colleagues and whatever. And the main character is a young woman in her late 20s who's had a bit of a rough time, and she returns home only to be attacked with a hammer. Very nearly kills her. She comes to in hospital, and a chip of bone, a chip of her skull, has been kind of knocked loose and is now pressed against a major artery in her brain, very, very close to the artery. However, because she has a kind of kidney disease, she has very thin artery walls. So, operation and attempt to remove this piece of bone will almost certainly kill her. However, the little bone shard is almost certainly going to kill her within a week anyway. She's going to cause an aneurysm. So it's quite a contrived, I hope the Holly wouldn't mind me saying that. It's a slightly contrived premise because it is just kind of the in the world of the book, it is a given that she has 7 days to live. So you have to accept that. She then spends her final week on Earth trying to solve her own murder.
Oh, that's such a good
It's just
idea.
fucking fun. It just rollicks along. It has a quite big cast of characters, but they're all very easy to keep track of. It has quite a kind of Agatha Christie energy to it in that regard. But yeah, I just had a really nice time. I thought it was very atmospheric. It was very fun. I
That sounds
thought
good.
I'd guess what was going to happen because I'm smart, but I was wrong. And yeah, I had a good time.
I love this. Okay, that sounds really good. So you're chairing an event on Thursday,
Yes.
which is where?
It's an off-site with Waterstones Piccadilly. It's in, you know, the
Ooh.
big church.
Next to the
Yeah.
with the
Which
beautiful
I'm
magnolia tree outside. I know it well.
closure. Absolutely bricking it because I have been to that church before. I've been to an event at that church. And when I agreed to chair this event, I did not really clock
The
the
scale.
church. The last time I was in that church, it was to see Donna Tartt talk about the Goldfinch. There's a big capacity in that space.
Well, you're going to have a great time.
I'm going to be popping a beta blocker. I'm going to be prepared and it's going to be gorgeous. I can't wait.
It's going to be so good. Okay. So, my next book was recommended to me by gorgeous, gorgeous Elizabeth from Dawn Summertown,
Oh,
who
God, I love Elizabeth.
EC Reads on Instagram.
Good ship.
Really good shit. Great taste. So, this, content note, this next book is very, very much about sexual violence. If you skip forward a min or however long. So the book that she recommended was called The Secret History of the Rape Kit by Pagan Kennedy. I did not look this up before I read it. So I was expecting it to be more non-fic sort of. I'm very interested in like the sort of realities of forensic science, like, what is real, what is fake, what like the limitations of various elements that we've taken for granted as a real part of forensic science. So I was expecting it to be like a literal history of the rape kit and what it can do, what it can't do, how it's been misused in popular culture, blah, blah, blah. It's actually more a biography of the woman that invented it and was then sort of written out of its history, vanished into obscurity. And I really enjoyed it. It was really very interesting. I did not know anything about a lot of what I read in this book. And if it's something, it's actually pretty light on the actual sexual violence. So I would say it's not one that you need to approach with like a wild amount of caution, but obviously it is still about sexual violence. I really got a lot out of that. So thank you once again to gorgeous Elizabeth. What's your next book?
Truly, I was just going to say, truly, everything that she recommends has something about it that it intrigues me.
Agreed.
I thoroughly recommend following her on Instagram. My next book. Okay, so that's the end of the novels. My novel era of the month. I have started another one though, which I'm going to save for next month, but I've just started something that from the very first page, the voice slapped me in the face. So I'm really excited to share that with the gang, but all in good time. So this month I do a lot of work with a creative writing kind of company called Writers HQ. And they had a short story festival this month, and I taught two workshops, which involved just rereading a lot of short stories to figure out what I wanted to talk about, what I could use as examples to demonstrate some of the advice I was giving. And I had a really fucking lovely time, and I ended up rereading three collections over the course of the month. Not in their entirety. I skipped some of the stories that I knew I wasn't going to use, but I thought I would just share them with the class. But I'll do one at a time. We'll keep going back and forth. So the first collection that I did read in its entirety, even though I did not have time, I couldn't put it down, is Yes, Yes, More, More by Anna Wood. I've definitely discussed this on the pod
A long
before.
time ago. So, you're welcome to discuss again.
Have you read it?
I have not.
Oh, Bethany, I'm telling you right now, it is such an incredible collection. So it's very much based in the real world, right? There's no speculative elements to it whatsoever. And the stories, the premise of each story tends to be like real, like moments filled with just absolute joy and love. It's a really joyful collection that says yes to life. My absolute favorite story in there is, oh fuck, I actually can't even pick a favorite. I was just gonna pluck one at random. But for example, there's one that's just called Lunch, about a woman going for lunch. There's another one in which it's like a bank holiday Sunday, and a woman, it's often the same character. She's that just down the pub with all her mates, and they all get smashed and eat seafood, and she gets eaten out by a rando. Like, they're just, the story's just
Oh,
wonderful.
perfect afternoon.
Right, they have fucking oysters and absinthe, and then she gets eaten out,
What
and
a
then she
dream.
has a bath.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. But one of the stories that I think is most kind of probably well known in the collection won the Galley Beggar Prize many moons ago, and it's a woman who's just attending a job interview, and it will be a big step up for her. It will be a big, like, pay rise. And simultaneously, as she is sitting in this interview, she is also on the holiday that she can now afford because she gets the job. Story's called When Can You Start? I believe it's available to read online, but it's this incredible example of a very sophisticated kind of dual timeline. And the purpose of the story is ultimately like, and this is the way that Anna articulated it. The excitement of getting a new job. She's like, work's work, fuck work. We don't live to work, right? We work so we can live. So she is not excited about the job. She's excited about
The life
having a
that
job
will give her.
in front. Like, oh, it's just, yeah, it's just an incredible piece of work. And it was such a pleasure to sink into these stories again. On a line level, they're stunning. The kind of beautiful observations and kind of very real. Oh, also, there's a whole fucking story set in New Orleans. Completely glossed over that. Which is based on Death in Venice. Yeah, I just cannot recommend it enough. And also I feel as well, like short fiction, I know that lots of people find it challenging because each story feels like starting a fresh novel, entering a fresh world. I would really urge anyone listening who is not a short story reader to pick up something like Yes, Yes, More, More. Just read one every so often. Just treat yourself. Have with your morning cup of coffee, just read a story. They're super short. You can read them in 15 minutes. I really think we should all be incorporating more short fiction into our reading lives.
Well, you've sold it to me.
Hell yeah.
I'm in. So the next thing I read is the same thing that everybody in the world is reading right now. What is in
Fame.
the window of every, what do you say?
I was joking. Fame sick.
Oh, no, but I would like to read that.
Yesteryear.
No.
Oh my God.
What if boys? What if that, but boys? It's in the window of every single shop, every bookshop in London. London Falling by Patrick Craddan Keyes.
Oh, ah, fuck. I would have
You
got it.
fool, you absolute fool. London Falling by Patrick Craddan Keyes. What a banger. It is as good as everyone says it is. He's the guy. Like, you gotta hand it to him. That man knows how to research and write a nonfiction book. So here is, if you do not know about London Falling by Patrick Craddan Keyes, here it is. In 2019, a London teenager, Zach Brettler, fell to his death from a luxury apartment building on the banks of the Thames. On a desperate quest to understand how their son had died, his grieving parents made a terrible discovery. Zach had been leading a fantasy life, posing as the son of a wealthy Russian oligarch. Patrick Radenke follows Zach's parents on a dark journey to find out what brought him to the balcony that night and how a teenager's life of make-believe drew him into the city's terrifying underworld. So this is basically like What If Anna Delvey, but goes horribly wrong. It's so compelling. He like the depth of research, the places that this book goes, I could not have predicted. I just thought it was absolutely amazing. And if you like nonfiction, if you have any interest in crime, I would recommend this to like literally anyone.
Yeah, I always completely forget because this book is everywhere. Lots of people talk about it. I completely forgot what the dark secret that this young man was, this double life element. And yeah, I'm desperate to read it.
Yeah, it's so good. I'm strongly pro, will recommend without hesitation to literally anyone that reads books. What's your next one?
So again, another short story collection, but I reread the vast majority of stories in She's Always Hungry by Eliza Clarke. Again, I'm guessing you don't read a huge amount of short fiction, do you?
I'm a bad boy, but when I do, I really like it.
That's what everyone says, man, and then they don't return to it. So I think She's Always Hungry is quite an exciting collection. Excuse me, Jesus. Did you hear that?
No.
Phone just popped off with a really loud big noise. Anyway, yeah, She's Always Hungry by Eliza Clarke is a really interesting collection because it's very rare for a short story collection to kind of pop off and sell any kind of significant volume. I'm not privy to Eliza's sales details, but Faber released like a special hardback edition. Like they went really hard, and that's always really exciting. This collection has a real mix. It's kind of stories over the kind of course of Eliza's career. I think some of them she wrote before Boy Parts, and some of them were more recent. They kind of swing between sci-fi fantasy and kind of realism. My favorite story is one called Goth GF, about a man who works in a bar and he really fancies his like hot goth bitch colleague. I just love it, man. Again, I love sleaze. The story's really sleazy. And I had a really good time rereading this collection.
Gorge. No, I'm definitely tempted by it. So the next book I read came out about 5 years ago. At the time, I was just like, oh, I'm not really, I just don't really get it. Like, what is it? Like, what's it about? I just felt like no one ever talked about what it was about. So I didn't read it. And then I read it and I loved it. And it is No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood.
That is your description there of everyone was talking about it, but no one was saying what it's about, is the perfect description. Because
Have
when
you read it?
I have, everyone talks about it being like an internet novel, but no one talks about what it is actually about.
So yeah, the first half, it's basically in two halves, and the first half is just kind of about like being on the internet in the like mid-noughties and like the rise of Twitter and then like the sort of enabling of like fascism and whatever via the internet, and has a lot of kind of like references in a way that's a little bit like Rejection.
I was just gonna say, Tony, the reason why I thought is because he's updated his Instagram bio with a phonetic pronunciation
Okay.
of his surname. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna quickly look it up to make sure I can just roll off my tongue. And then I got distracted. Yeah, Tony Tulatimuti.
Oh, cool, gorge. Well, thank you, Tony T. It's a little bit like that, the first half, in that it's so deeply internet in a way that's kind of satisfying, but you're also like, is there substance behind this? And in the same way as Rejection, the second half of this book is so moving that I cannot believe that I didn't know that that was what this book was about. And it basically goes into from the first half being very about being very online, goes into the second half, which is about her sister having a baby that is has like a congenital fetal abnormality or disability. And yeah, I found it so moving. And you spend the whole book being like, oh, I really hope this isn't true. And then you get to the acknowledgements and you're like, oh, like this was all, this is all real and is about like a real family. And yeah, as you can tell from how I'm sounding, I really found it very moving.
I have known you for 20 years. I have never seen you cry before.
Yeah, and that was me walking around Paris. Like I was literally, I remember where I finished it, and I remember like the street I was walking down. And you know me, I'm not like a baby guy. Like I'm not really into like children and babies, but I just felt there was something about this book that I was like, wow, it really got me, dude.
Bro.
Oh, sad little bird.
I know, man, that genuinely your emotional response to this book has like twisted my little heart.
Yeah, this book really twisted my heart. I loved it. So I cannot recommend this book enough. It's really short, it's really good, but it will, even if you are like a bitch that tries to be a cold bitch like me, it will probably get you. Please tell me about your next book.
Oh, all right. My next book is a book that needs no introduction, to be perfectly honest. It's Salt Slow by Julie Armfield.
Gorge, we love this book.
Again, one of my favorite short story collections, of which I have many, but I just think Julia has, again, I've used this phrase right on the pod, I think, but she has such a distinctive voice. The stories are so beautifully strange. She's an absolute master of fiction in which there is just like one strange thing, just like one strange thing. The worlds in which she creates are just so well realized. My favorite story in this collection is one called Formerly Feral, about a woman who's or a girl rather, whose stepmother has a daughter that's a wolf. It's just beautifully strange. And
Isn't that the first story?
no, the first story is the one about the girl who turns into a praying mantis.
Oh, sorry. I love this. Yeah, I remember reading this. It was, yeah, absolute banger. I have not revisited it, but it really holds up as like a modern classic short story collection, IMO.
I also, I just realized, I just said my favorite story is Formerly Feral, but that's actually not one I reread because I've reread it so many times. I think in this reading, my favorite was either Stop Your Girl's Ears with Wax, about a rock band that kind of sends their fans feral.
Yes.
Fucking wicked.
That is
Loved it.
wicked, and that's so up your street.
So me.
That's so you. Well, I took a small paperback to Paris on the grounds that, like, if I didn't want to be on my phone or whatever, like, I looked at my pile of unread books and was like, what's short? What doesn't take up space in my hand luggage? I picked up Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin.
Oh.
Did you know it's set in Paris?
No, I did not.
Either, because I'm a dumb little bee. And I think it's actually my first James Baldwin book. I've seen like adaptation, I've seen versions of James Baldwin things, but I've never read a James Baldwin book, which feels unchic of me. So it's set in the 1950s Paris of American expats, liaisons, and violence. This now classic love story of a fated love triangle explores with uncompromising clarity the conflicts between desire, conventional morality, and sexual identity. It's basically about like two men having a relationship in Paris in the 50s, and then the ways in which it sort of goes horribly wrong. And it's great. I would really, it's not original of me to say that James Baldwin is good, but this really slapped. And I loved reading it in Paris. Pardon?
He's Justin.
James Baldwin, good. Yeah.
Good job.
Good at his job. Yeah, loved Giovanni's Room. Absolutely loved it and felt very stylish reading it in Paris. Okay, what's
Again,
your
just a
next one?
chic fucking move for you, bro.
I know, I'm all about the chic moves. Did you have another one or are you?
No, I'm done. My only final thought regarding my reading this month is I also revisited my all-time favorite short story, which I thought was available to read for free on the internet, but when you look it up, the first hit, for me at least, was me talking about it.
Great.
So you may have to actually track down a fizzy cop. But the story is called Dentophilia by Julia Slavin. It's in a collection called the woman who cut her leg off, the woman who cut off her leg at the Maidstone Club. It's going to be a difficult book to track down. It's also in an anthology that Zadie Smith edited called The People of America, I think. But it's a story about a woman who spontaneously grows teeth all over her entire body. And it's from the perspective of her husband. And I don't think I've ever found a story that delighted me and moved me quite as much as this one. So
Cool.
for my more advanced short story readers who are prepared to put the work in and track something really unusual down, give it a go. Dentophilia, Julia Slavin. Judy Slavin.
Gosh. That's we love a deep cut. We love a niche. So my final book of the month is The Palm House by Gwendolyn Riley,
Oh.
which I started and was like, oh, I found it a little bit hard to get into. I really like Gwendolyn Riley. I've read everything she's published so far. Big fan. Found it just a little bit difficult to get into, but once I hit my stride, loved it. So here is the blurb. Laura Miller and Edmund Putnam have been friends for a long time. Theirs is a happy meeting of minds with long evenings spent huddled in an ancient pub by the Thames, where they share office gossip, reflect on their teenage passions, and lament the state of the world. Recently, though, Putnam has been harder to reach. He's lost his father, and the magazine to which he's dedicated his life has been hijacked by an insufferable new editor. Laura has her own problems with a prickly mother and a tricky past, and in a beautiful and indifferent city, her day-to-day life is precarious. But as Putnam starts to sink into despondency, she must try to bring him back. I mean, I really like this book, but all the best bits, in my opinion, are the bits about her looking back at her teenage years and thinking about like her past. I didn't necessarily find like the stuff about their friendship or like the kind of more contemporary stuff as compelling, but like there's a long section about when she got really into a comedian as a teenager and started sort of following him on tour and things that happened between them, I thought was amazing. So it's not my favorite of hers, but I still got a lot out of it. That's my review of The Palm House. So that's it. Those are all our books.
Yeah, that's everything.
So this month, you've got on the 7th of May, you've got your Holly Jackson event.
Oh, yeah.
Before we sign off, because this event will be going out on 4th of May, if you have a local election on the 7th of May in your area, please vote. I've been working hard trying to get people to vote for a specific party. But, I don't mind who you vote for, really.
And I don't mind that you vote reform, and I think it's wonderful you are more politically active, but some of our listeners won't like that.
Look, I've been canvassing for the Green Party. I've been stomping the streets. I've been leafleting. I've been door knocking. I've been trying to, do my best to turn Lewisham green. But yeah, don't forget that on Thursday there is an election. If you can vote in your area and you happen to be going to a book event in the evening, make a plan to vote in the morning before you go out.
The organized gang.
Be an organized queen. I've got no book chat for you happening in May, so I thought I would steal this opportunity to remind you to vote on Thursday, preferably for the Green Party, but I can't tell you what to do. Well, I've had a great time. I feel like we've really this has been a very eye-opening episode.
I'm truly delighted that we have unlocked the ideal way for us to do the pod without it interfering with our very busy lives, because this is perfect.
I love it,
Hope our listeners are enjoying the new format. We find it sustainable. So this is what we're going to be doing from now on.
I sincerely hope we are. And I will see you next month.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.